Another day is here, and you're ready for it. What to wear? Check. Breakfast, lunch, and dinner? Check. Planning for what's next and how to save for it? That's where Bank of America can help. For your financial to-dos, Bank of America has experts ready to help get you closer to your goals. Get started at one of our local financial centers or 24-7 in our mobile banking app. Find a location near you at bankofamerica.com/talktous. What would you like the power to do? Mobile banking requires downloading the app and is only available for select devices. Message and data rates may apply. Bank of America NA, member FDIC.
It's time for today's Lucky Land horoscope with Victoria Cash.
Life's gotten mundane, so shake up the daily routine and be adventurous with a trip to Lucky Land. You know what they say, your chance to win starts with a spin. So go to LuckyLandSlots.com to play over 100 social casino-style games for free for your chance to redeem some serious prizes. Get lucky today at LuckyLandSlots.com.
Available to players in the U.S., excluding Washington and Michigan. No purchase necessary. VGW Group. Void where prohibited by law. 18 plus. Terms and conditions apply.
Hey guys, it is Ryan. I'm not sure if you know this about me, but I'm a bit of a fun fanatic when I can. I like to work, but I like fun too. It's a thing. And now the truth is out there. I can tell you about my favorite place to have fun. Chumba Casino. They have hundreds of social casino style games to choose from with new games released each week. You can play for free anytime, anywhere. And each day brings a new chance to collect daily bonuses. So join me in the fun. Sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18 plus.
Football is many things. Unpredictable, exciting, colourful, passionate, absorbing, expensive.
Venal, infuriating, exasperating, time-consuming, depressing. But one thing it most certainly is not, is a level playing field.
Welcome to the famous sloping pitch.
In a week where there's a new number one in the list of the three most depressing sentences in the English language. They are, at three, live, the opening ceremony of the Olympic Games. Two, live, the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympic Games. And new this week from the BBC, live, text coverage of the opening ceremony of the Winter Olympic Games.
Oh, my God, the spirit of Sepp Blatter alive and well at the Beijing Winter Olympics, wasn't it? See that, the self-aggrandising speeches, you know, the Nobel Prize committee nudging kind of stuff.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, a beacon of peace to all peoples.
Yes.
Apart from the Uyghurs, who don't have a telly in their concentration camp, apparently, so they haven't really got into the curling. It was also a week in which Boris Johnson, God, hold on to your lunch, apparently sang I Will Survive as he appointed Gitto Harry to be his new... It's a good name, isn't it? Gitto.
Great name. Yeah, great name.
To be his new communications director, as if he wasn't, you know, turning our stomachs enough in normal progress.
Yeah. But
angling for his next career move, perhaps, appearing on The Masked Singer in a giant turd costume. Sort of. But the bombshell news, the real bombshell news this week. Channel 5 drop Neighbours.
Yeah.
I hadn't realised that that Channel 5 were actually, you know, weren't just buying in episodes. They were actually financing the whole, they, you know, they were spending so much on it, they were financing the whole thing.
Yeah, yeah, yeah. I mean, it's built on British money, Neighbours.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, hence they come over here and do...
As
and
is
do...
the whole country of Australia.
Yeah, well, yeah, there is that. The £10 poms. Yeah, yeah. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. I mean, it's a little soon for me. I'm quite raw about it, Chris. You know, as someone who I've lived with, that Neighbours is, well, I wouldn't say so much in my blood as I'd go a further cliche. I'd go all the way to DNA. let's take that step.
Is it your DNA, but
and yeah. Also, of course, Neighbours. The theme tune to Neighbours was written by Jackie Trent and Tony Hatch, the same people that wrote the Stoke City 1972 League Cup song.
Oh my God, so you're practically related.
Yeah, and it's 50 years since that, and it just feels like something's ending.
It's heartache, yeah. Mm. I mean, apparently the final straw was the Everton fans' treatment of Rafa Benitez. Do you know that?
Yeah.
You know, with a little understanding, they could have found the perfect blend.
They could have
done. The producers thought it's as if we've been wasting our time pushing this message for 37 years, nobody's listening. And so they're all really depressed and gave up.
And of course, Neighbours, you talk about adapt or die, you know, as you and I both know, and Neighbours originally started set in Alice Springs, wasn't it, Chris? where the neighbours were actually 16,000 kilometres apart and never saw each other.
I'm just going out to the North Pasture. I'll see you a week on Thursday.
The kind of focus group said, they need to be closer. Bring them closer in.
Make a little cul-de-sac.
Yeah.
They can play cricket on the road.
You know I've been on the Neighbours tour, don't you?
Have you?
I went to see the Ashes in Australia, and I actually missed a morning's play to go on the Neighbours tour.
Which mainly was more important.
Well, my kids would never forgive me if I hadn't gone, because they've always laughed about me. And they did this brilliant thing, because obviously the test matches around Christmas time, and they said, we've got to
got a bit of a special thing. First of all, Carl Kennedy was there, which is fantastic. Carl Kennedy turns up on the tour.
Very much the William Roach of the whole enterprise, isn't he? Yeah.
And they said, oh, no, now, because they're not actually filming at the moment, we've got a little bit of a special treat for you today. Not only are we going to go to Ramsey Street, which, by the way, isn't actually called Ramsey Street. It's just another street. Anyway, never mind. And they said, we're going to take you to see the studio, you know, because they're not filming it, right? And, you know, this is a very rare thing that you get a chance to do because they're broken for Christmas. And we drove into this car park, right? And there's a big building. And they go, there it is. And then drove out again. We weren't allowed onto the set or anything. They just pointed at the studio.
Oh, man. I mean, I haven't watched Neighbours for years. I mean, we used to watch it, obviously, when you were sleeping on the floor of my living room for 3.5 years.
You had no choice. No,
exactly. But I remember from at the beginning, it was like a sitcom. It was like it would have perfectly formed little sitcom plots, wouldn't it? Like when Max Ramsey had a toothache and then he couldn't sleep because of his tooth and there was a dog barking and he has a row with the bloke who's dog it is, and then in the last scene he goes to the dentist and the dentist poises over him with the drill. It's the bloke with the dog. The bloke he's had the row with.
But isn't that incidentally is Sporting Sam. I don't know whether you ever remember Sporting Sam, which was a little cartoon in which whatever sport Sporting Sam was going to be doing that weekend, on the way he'd have an argument with somebody, and when he got there they were the ref. It was the same joke every week.
Sporting Max Ramsey.
Yeah.
Anyway, before we stroll at our leisure through the gold-trimmed halls of the luxury department store that is the Premier League, let us first wander into the depressing pound store where everything somehow costs a tenner that is the very bottom of the EFL, which is where my team, Oldham Athletic, currently the 91st placed member of the 92 club, still find themselves. And yet, Nick, all of a sudden, it's well turned upside down. After weeks of slip-sliding further and further adrift, like a poorly aimed turd down the porcelain backboard heading for the inevitable flush, suddenly things are going our way.
Oh, yes.
I mean, on Tuesday evening, I don't know whether this ever happened to me before, on Tuesday evening was a full programme of League Two fixtures, seven of which you could reasonably think, at a pinch, affected the relegation issue. And all seven of them went our way. It was absolutely staggering. Football never does that. On its best day, it'll allow one of your rivals to grab an injury time equaliser or something. But now, and even more staggering, I played football myself on Tuesday evening before watching the game on iFollow, the web thing.
Yeah.
And the team I was in won 5-0. So we got eight results in a row, in a string, on one evening. It was just...
It was your day of days, Chris.
Well, it was like an episode of The Twilight Zone. And I was going to find out that the train I took to get to Battersea Park crashed and I died. And I was actually in purgatory. And the bloke walking his dog who said he was a scout for Leighton Orient was really God testing me.
Well, yeah, but then what about all the other people on the train? Were they all Oldham fans as well? Because otherwise that doesn't really work.
No, they were all dead and heading somewhere else.
Oh, well, okay, fair enough. It was your own personal private...
Yeah, it was my own personal test. Yeah. Anyway, if it was real, which I'm not sure it was, Oldham beat Bristol Rovers 2-1 at Boundary Park. We only had 29% of the possession. I love it when you win a game when you've only had 29% of the possession. But we created way more chances. Should really have had more goals. Junior Luamba had a goal chalked off for offside when he clearly wasn't. And Callum Whelan had a Jeff Hurst-style crossbar bounce down that didn't count. Actually, no, not a Jeff Hurst-style, a sort of Frank Lampard style, where it didn't count. And after the game, Joey Barton, obviously, you know, an ostentatiously fair-minded man, the Bristol Rovers manager, said that the linesman should go to Specsavers because he could see it was 3 feet over the line from where he was in the dugout. Mm. And it seemed to bounce off the plastic frame that they have now at the bottom of the net, you know, and then bounce out from that, which is another innovation that has made things a little bit more shit, which is kind of our mission statement.
Yes, yeah, absolutely.
And could have cost us points. We got no favours from the referee, even though his name was Scott Oldham.
It's as no, if he, was it?
Yeah, it's as if he bends over backwards not to show favouritism. You'd think he'd enjoy coming to Boundary Park. All the chants have come on Oldham, you know. But no, but it's like he's more fair than is humanly possible.
Yeah, yeah.
You know. And two goals for Keeler Dunn, who's been misspelled all season on Sky Sports. And, you know, it's a badge of pride to know that we're probably the only football podcast with a John Betjeman parody ready to drop at a moment's notice.
Exactly, yeah. Keeler Dunn. Legs burnished and burned by Oldham Sun.
Exactly. Yes. But extraordinary stuff. Carlisle lost, Barrow lost, Colchester lost, Rochdale lost, Stevenage lost, Walsall lost and sacked the manager. And the Oldham players were playing with belief. It's an amazing turnaround. I mean, 3 weeks ago, their heads had dropped. They were on the floor. They were gone when I went. You could see the second goal went in. They were actually bent over at the waist with their, you know, hands on their knees. They'd nothing going for them. But now we've got hope. And not just Hallam Hope, our makeshift centre forward and one-man barn door preservation society.
And who would have thought that, you know, the second coming of Christ would come in the shape of John Sheridan, fantastic thing.
And that's 7 points out of nine, because we had a win away at Scunthorpe as well, the only team having a worse season than us so far. We grabbed a stressful 1-0 win thanks to a late overhead kick winner from Junior Luamba. Senior Luamba must be so proud.
Yes,
don't you think?
You'd have thought so.
Yes. I've watched this game lots of times on the internet, because you can do that now, you know, watch the highlights the next day and all day.
I'm going to have to get rid of that VHS machine.
I know, because there was a bloke. There was a bit where the Oldham fans spill out of the away end. It was just packed.
Yeah, yeah.
And a bloke leapt over the advertising hoardings, barked his shin on the top, went sprawling, and then did that extremely painful limping up to the mob of players, yes, celebrating the goal. And you'd know if a steward went after him, he'd have caught him at a stroll.
Like being hugged by Douglas Bader.
But he could have got 200 quid off Harry Hill for it.
Yes.
Slapstick.
I don't think he pays the money himself, does he, Harry Hill?
I think it comes
under the budget of the programme.
It's contractually, it has to.
Oh, is it?
Yeah, it's Harry Hill's money. That's why he stopped doing it.
Well, I don't blame him.
So when we last spoke, you know, Nick, listeners, we were 8 points from safety, looking doomed, mountain to climb, etc., etc. Now we're just 2 points behind Carlisle, with a game in hand and a game against Carlisle still to come. The third Chesurrection underway. And in this heady new atmosphere, my son John texted me to say he'd found a table with Oldham in fourth place. It was Canadian freestyle ski jumper Megan Oldham, just missed out on a medal in Beijing.
Is there anybody in the world who isn't called Oldham now?
It seems
incredible.
Exactly. It's like the whole world of sport has been given over to the Chesurrection.
Yeah,
the news of the Chesurrection.
Exactly. There used to be a landlord in Stoke who changed his name to Burnley because he supported Burnley. And clearly, because of this programme, Chris, people are changing their name to Oldham.
Anyway, we should move on from the turd fest at the bottom of the EFL. The most peculiar story of the week concerned the paradox of Kurt Zouma's cat, who was simultaneously being slapped and not being slapped, depending on whether you're on TikTok or not.
Mm.
I mean, that's some life lessons for Kurt Zouma to learn there, don't you think?
Yes, I might have to have a bit of a rant here, because I have to say up front, okay, this was a senseless and cruel act, all right? Just like the kitten juggling and the jerk, you know, wrong. It is wrong, okay? Let's accept it. It is wrong, right? So there's 260,000 people have gone onto a petition to say that it's wrong. Nobody is arguing with
it. Nobody's saying
this
right.
is a free hit. Okay, this is a free hit to go, look at me, I didn't do it, somebody else did it, all right? And who, I want to know, are they aligning themselves with? Because there is no opposition. There is nobody
not even
out there saying these cats brought it on themselves.
Not even Kurt Zouma.
Nobody.
No,
and,
exactly.
And given that we've mentioned John Betjeman, I'm going to do you another quote now, and this one's from the famous historian Macaulay. We know of no spectacle so ridiculous as the British public in one of its periodical fits of morality. And quite honestly, that is exactly what's happening.
Oh, it's an incredible amount of cant, isn't there, going on?
Can you say that? They're looking it up.
Well, I like that David Moyes got such stick for picking him on the for the game against Watford on Tuesday. And Moyes said, well, you know, Zouma's one of his best players and he has to make a football decision. It's almost as if Zouma was, you know, not one of his best players, he'd have dropped him. You know, if he wasn't as good at football, you know.
It's a vote of confidence. Listen, lads, there's one or two of you in this dressing room, if you throw and kick a cat, you're going to get picked. There's one or two of you, you're not. So think on.
And the other thing that Moyes said was, well, you know, he has to obviously take care of the football side of things.
Yeah.
You know, how to get more distance on the cat, how to get a bit of a swerve if you catch it right on the valve. You know,
yeah,
and
yeah.
These things are important.
Well, I think what upsets me is yes, of course, terrible, awful thing. But you know, where are these voices? Where is the petition of 260,000 people over the, you know, 5,000 workers who've died in Qatar building the stadia? You know, over China, over all of those things. That's what really, really upsets me.
I think if you want a petition like that in this country, cats have to be building the stadia.
They have to be building the stadia. It has to be, yes, like some sort of a goodies episode where a giant cat is building a stadium. But also, I did see Chris Packham, who, you know, does great stuff.
Yeah.
Also loves to be aligned with obvious truths. He said, kids will see how Kurt Zouma treats defenceless animals and want to emulate him. Well, that's an education thing, isn't it? That is not a Kurt Zouma thing. That is kids being stupid.
Well, it does turn out that nothing unites football fans, West Ham and Watford fans on Tuesday, like a bit of cat abuse, for which, ironically, Kurt Zouma received dog's abuse. yeah. know, getting booed from all corners of West Ham's free taxpayer swindling stadium.
Yeah.
And then the RSPCA came, took his cats away to
his
safety.
Cats away, yeah.
And if the crowd abuse carries on, maybe the PFA will turn up in a van and take Zuma somewhere.
Yeah, yeah. And you know, in the same week that Carl Reisner...
yes, exactly.
Was actually his case was closed about his cruelty. Was it? Yes, it was. Yeah. He'd paid a fine and promised never to work in equestrianism again, and it was over. But
well, it was only because he was so good at equestrianism that it was an issue at all. If he'd been a lousy equestrian, they'd have just dropped him, and that'd been it.
They would have. And I tell you how easy a subject this is to back up. Even the PFA said something. So, you know, that tells you something, doesn't it? Because they've said all for weeks.
There was another strange moment this week. Do you see where Glenn Hoddle criticised Dele Alli for what he was wearing, for dressing too casually at the Everton-Brentford game, at the Cup game? And he stopped just short of saying, tuck your shirt in, which would have been absolutely priceless, wouldn't it?
Yes.
Glenn Hoddle was just the ultimate... shirt out rebel in his
absolutely,
in his blade
and socks around his ankles.
Yeah, and thus, you know, yesterday's rebel becomes today's establishment fuddy duddy.
Yes.
And one day, Dele Alli will be the chairman of the FAP, FA, charging people with bringing the game into disrepute. Yes. You know,
poacher turned shirt keeper.
Yeah.
Or something.
Anyway, yeah, I mean, we mentioned Beijing earlier, and obviously, Beijing are like the forerunners this within this calendar year of Qatar's attempt to sport wash their human rights stuff.
It is a really low bar year, isn't it?
Yeah, it really is. I mean, this sports washing thing isn't going very well, it seems to me, for China. I mean, the absence of diplomats from the US and the UK and the other top Western nations only really highlights, doesn't it, the Uyghur thing, the Uyghur situation and the other Chinese human rights issues. And not to mention the fact that there wasn't any real snow and makes the whole thing seem like the image is the whole purpose of it. Did you see, I don't know if you ever see Jimmy Kimmel, the American comedian, had a good line. He showed the ski jump, which is in the middle of the city by the river, with all its fake snow. No snow, sunshine, bright sunshine, snow anywhere, apart from on this slope. And it was right next to two enormous smoke-belching cooling towers for some kind of foundry or other. And he said it was ironic to see all the fake snow right next to the reason why we don't have winter anymore.
Actually, I didn't know. I'd read something about them creating all this snow, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And it's so fake snow works, which makes me think that the next Winter Olympics could be in Tamworth, where they have the snow dome.
Why not? Or in Qatar.
Yeah.
You know, I mean, it's the whole event seems to be more like sports soiling to me, at the very least sports skid marking, as Qatar may find later this year when they arrest people for having rainbow laces. You know, and sport will shine a spotlight on your country, show the world what you really have to offer. Shit, you don't want to do that.
Do you know, but the thing is, especially about football, that you know, it's perfectly capable of wiping shit all over everything without going to some sort of dubious regime.
Isn't it, though? I mean, and this week, of all weeks, the UK and Republic of Ireland Football Associations agreed on something. They've agreed not to mount a forlorn and doomed bid to host the 2030 World Cup, which would be sports washing our... burgeoning hooliganism problem, I imagine.
Well,
but the British government commissioned a feasibility study into a joint bid about a year ago and spent about 2.8 million quid. How did that cost so much?
I don't know. That's a lot of photocopying, isn't it?
Well, you just need to get hold of one of those maps I got for Christmas where you scratch off the football grounds you've been to, don't you?
Yeah, basically.
And actually, no, that was a couple of Christmases ago. This time I got one with funny place names.
Did you?
Did you know there's a Roger Moore?
No, I'm not having it.
There is, and you're
not having that.
Anyway, the feasibility of this seemed a lot more feasible, didn't it, a year ago before the Euro final when England fans turned Wembley Stadium into the US Capitol on January the 6th. I mean, it's a really sort of sickening increase in football fan misbehaviour, really, since the grounds were opened again after lockdowns, as though they've been saving it up, you know.
But also in France,
everywhere.
Terrible, terrible trouble.
Everywhere,
And I saw that Feyenoord played Ajax last week, and the police sent in a dummy team bus for the Feyenoord fans to attack, whilst the real team bus went a different way.
Oh, well, that's fantastic.
It is quite good, isn't it? Yeah, I mean, not pleasing in the sense that any sort of violence is pleasing, but pleasing that they went to the trouble of doing it.
Yeah, yeah.
And as far as the European Championships and the World Cup goes, it seems to me there are two major problems to this. One, we've just had it,
yeah,
haven't we? Basically,
yeah.
You know, basically we have.
Yeah.
And secondly, you know, you're saying to UEFA, we'd really like the World Cup, but do you know what? We think it's cheaper to have yeah. the European. And, you know.
And
you,
slightly sooner.
Yeah. I don't know whether you know this, but UEFA and FIFA don't like each other.
They don't like
they
each other.
They hate yeah. each other. So yeah. it's just so badly done.
Well, no, I mean, it does feel sensible not to be letting ourselves in for that disappointment again after our attempts to get 2018 and 2022.
Yeah.
Those years ago. But Boris Johnson remained an enthusiastic backer of the idea, talking fondly of the legacy of the 2012 Olympics, which he's fond of taking credit for, hoping perhaps to bookend his career with more shots of him clumsily waving a giant flag and talking about whiff-waff. Mm. But last time we had a bid, we had obviously former Prime Minister David Cameron, David Beckham and Prince William yep. fronting the bid for 2018. This time the feasibility study had suggested Alex Salmond, Robbie Savage and Prince Andrew. So maybe it's, you know, for the best. I mean, we only got two votes last time, and one of those was us voting for ourselves.
Well, yeah, but
and this time, even the FA representative was leaning towards Uruguay.
Yes. What, for the Euros?
No, for the 2030 yeah. World Cup. Well, Uruguay are the favourites, because the centenary of the first one, of 1930.
That makes sense. Who would object to that?
Well, because the World Cup itself is now so huge that Uruguay is too small a country for it. So it would have to be Uruguay, Argentina, Paraguay and Chile, apparently.
Yeah.
And the rival bids are likely to be from Spain and Portugal together because it's to create a big enough unit.
Yes.
And China, with more sports watching for them.
Oh, no. Because it's because Uruguay famously have a population of about 5.9 million or something.
They're very like small. They're very, very small.
Very, very small.
They're still the smallest population country to have won it, aren't they?
I would have thought so. Yeah.
And also the pressure would have been on to step up the level of corruption and human rights that we can muster here, you know, just to meet FIFA's criteria for hosting.
Yeah.
I mean, we're on the point of embarrassing a prime minister into resigning over a bit of cake and some balloons. It's not exactly the fall of the fucking Roman Empire, is it?
you say that.
I say that, yeah. Now, so yes, as you say, they're preparing a joint bid instead for the 2028 Euros, and which also seems a bit odd. And it seems a bit odd of a thing for Boris Johnson to get behind as well, since his whole defining effort was to separate us off from Europe, was to create as much distance as possible from Europe, to look out into the rest of the world, you know. And why would the rest of the West of Europe vote to have the Euros here? I mean, look at how they vote in Eurovision. You know, it's something we're never going to have to host because the winners host the next one. And the rest of Europe's disdain for the UK is sort of nakedly on show, isn't
it? Only think that Boris Johnson's heard that the European Championship finals are like 4 weeks of non-stop partying. And that's very much his thing.
The flag waving and the whiff whack.
Yeah.
Apparently I read that the FA have been on a charm offensive to counter European perceptions.
God, help us!
Imagine this. To counter European perceptions of English arrogance. And Boris Johnson seems the perfect figurehead for that, doesn't he? I mean, those pesky Europeans, they're going to realise they've got it all wrong. We're actually way more arrogant than they ever thought possible. A short PS. Did you see any of the AFCON final, which the FIFA guy was at, Gianni Infantino?
No, I actually missed the final. I saw a lot of the AFCON.
It's a tedious game, unfortunately. And Infantino looked like he was going to fall asleep during it. They had a shot of him in the VIP mm-hmm. area, and he looked like he was bored to the point of rudeness. And then at the end, they crapped up the trophy presentation altogether. They had this stage, you know how they do now. They have the stage set up on the grass for the players to get up, and then but Infantino decided he wasn't going to give them the trophy there, and he ran away with it up the steps to like what would be the royal box, and beckoning Koulibaly, the Senegal captain, after him.
And he refused to do it. Is that right?
No. He went up, but he didn't know what was going on. And it looks like a little parody trophy as well. It looked really light.
A Sabutio trophy.
It looked like it was gold painted balsa wood with ping pong balls on it.
Yeah.
And like a school project, you know. Yeah. And they presumably thought they got him up to the president of Cameroon and some Afghan bigwig. And they presumably then they're fighting over the three of them with Infantino, who's going to give it to Koulibaly. And in the end, six hands are giving him this tiny little flyweight thing.
Yeah.
And they presumably think he's going to turn and do the crap, and then they'll be in all the pictures. And Koulibaly took it off them and then ran all the way back down the stairs to where his teammates were. Of course. To where
How
his teammates
course,
were,
course,
with
yeah,
the people
yeah, yeah.
who won the damn thing.
Yeah.
It was embarrassing, yeah. I thought. It was embarrassing.
But also, of course, last weekend was the FA Cup, which was just about to become the most brilliant FA Cup for a little bit.
Yeah.
You know, with West Ham scoring two goals outside of normal time, if you like one.
Well, yeah, that was an extraordinary game, wasn't it? I mean, they are saying, you know, the FA Cup is back. The thing is, the people who are saying saying it's the people who are saying that it wasn't. So, you know, what do they know? They're clearly just showing.
Well, absolutely. And actually, I mean, I thought it was really great. And what was quite interesting was that, you know, quite a few Premier League teams won in extra time, which is because they play fewer matches than the rest of us.
Yeah.
So, well, you know, what are they moaning about?
The extra time thing, you know, that's new this year, isn't it?
I quite like it. I think it's made it more immediate. I think that idea that by the end of this weekend, we know who will be in the next round.
But if you put yourself, you know, your Kidderminster Harriers, you know, you were the 91st minute equaliser, you'd have had a replay. You know, and you wouldn't have had extra time and the 121st minute demoralising.
I don't know. I think it's actually helped a little bit.
I
don't think it helps financially. I agree with you.
Well, I'm looking at it from the point of view of the aspiring 92 club member, and I rely on a handful of cup draws every season to scratch another grand off the map.
Yes, you know? Yes. And also the potential of being a plucky non-league club.
I
don't wish that on you.
There is
you,
that.
Obviously not.
Listen,
I think it was all ruined by the draw, of course, which kept all the Premiership teams apart from Southampton and somebody else.
And it happened way early as well, didn't it?
It did happen early. But I was saving this story, okay, for the final when Stoke got there. But now we've drawn Crystal Palace away. We're not going to get there. I want to tell you my FA Cup final story about my friend Sarge, who you've met. So Sarge, my mate, who comes from Stoke, and he ended up working at Wembley. Then he worked at the Millennium Stadium. So he's in charge of the FA Cup final, the Millennium Stadium, West Ham versus Liverpool, all right? Mm-hmm. And his big thing is once all the crowd's in, you know, he can have a bit of a relax because he's worried about trouble outside, blah, blah, blah. So they all get in. 5 minutes into the game, he gets a call. Oh, Sarge, there's been a fatality in the West Ham end. So obviously that's absolutely awful. And so he goes up there and they've taken the body away. And he knows it's an old gentleman. He's had a heart attack. Absolutely tragic. Mm. And his son's still sitting there, of course. So he goes in and he sits next to the son in the bloke's seat. And he goes, I'm really sorry about that. Blah, blah, blah. Would you...
I'm your new dad.
So he says, I'm really sorry. We need you to come out and, you know, we'll do all the formalities, blah, blah, blah. So the bloke goes, it's the fucking cup final. I'm not going anywhere.
It's
the cup final. Sarge says to him, oh, okay. He says, my dad would want me to be watching. He says, well, I'll tell you what, we'll take you somewhere, you know, in a different part of the ground. So they take him up. They take him up to this, like, executive box, executive area. And he goes in there and he's watching the rest of the first half. And then, of course, he comes to half time. And he's actually in the area that they've saved from Prince William. So Prince William comes in and Prince William goes, I'm very sorry to hear about your dad, because obviously he's been briefed and he's chatting away to Prince William. And then Sven-Göran Eriksson comes in. So he's chatting away to Sven-Göran Eriksson. Okay. And then Alan Pardew cuts short his halftime team talk to come up and speak to the boy whose dad has died. So he's chatting away, blah, blah, blah. And then what's the second half? And West Ham do really well. But in the end, they lose, I think, in extra time, don't they, to a Gerrard goal, blah, blah, blah. Anyway, it goes on and on and on and on. And they said, look, at the end, he's necking quite a lot of, you know, it's all free. And eventually, you know, Sven leaves and Prince William leaves and he's still there. And he's still there. And it's like 8 o'clock at night. And they're going, well, you know, listen, obviously you're going to have to go to the hospital to identify the body and all that. And, you know, really sorry. What an absolutely awful time. And he goes, no. It's been the best day of my life. This has been, without doubt, the best day of my life. So they usher him out and they said, look, anything we can do, let us know. Here's my card. Yeah. Please keep in touch. We want to make sure everything's all right. You need to get back to London, etc. Anything you need, you contact us here at the Millennium Stadium. We will make it happen. And he goes into the lift and the door's shut. Okay. And then in comedy fashion, the door's open again and he says, any chance of any take that tickets? And on that, I think we'll take a break.
I think we will.
To celebrate our 25th edition of the Famous Sloping Pitch, we've gone all the way back to the beginning and invited back our very first guest. In this, the first in occasional series of guest suggestions to improve the game that we all love. It's a kind of if I ruled the world of football. And our first manifesto belongs to the wonderful Tim Lovejoy. Tim, you're very, very welcome to be here. Good to see you.
Thank you for having me back.
Yeah.
Thank you.
Well, you know, I think it occurs to all of us at some stage that there should be changes.
Oh, lots.
And some of them purely for only for the benefit of our own team, but others Because I believe you love the game itself, not just your own team. So what are your bugbears and what are your solutions to them?
Well, okay, well, I'll start with a populist one. Okay. Right? The one that everybody wants.
We'll be the judge of that.
No, I really
don't think we represent the population, Chris.
All your listeners will love this one. Retrospective bans for cheating, or as they like to call it, simulation.
Yeah.
Yes.
Okay. We watch someone go down, yeah, and rather than calling it winning a foul, winning, yeah, a penalty.
Oh, he's got a right to go down.
He's
there.
Got a right to go down. Rather than that, we call it fraud against the fans.
I like it.
And because the fans are either paying for their subscription,
yeah,
or their TV license if they're watching, yeah, Match of the Day, or their tickets into the game, you are being fraudulent against... Is that the right word? Yeah.
Yeah. So who decides? Does a panel of fans decide? Or who
fans?
Do you need
I was going ex-pros, but let's go, yeah, fans.
No, I'm just saying, who's the fraud against?
And there's going to have to be a medical element to this, isn't there? You know, how do you definitively prove
what to the punishment?
I mean, okay, if it's pretending you've been hit in the face when you've been,
yeah,
you know, that's, yeah, really clear.
Yeah.
But if you've gone down with, you know, he's feeling his groin as they
the West Ham bloke this week with the dive he did. I can't think of what his name is now. That West Ham.
Oh, it's hilarious! Got just in the cup game.
It was just absolute joke. It was like an advert.
Yeah,
and he went
Lanzini
down.
That, or somebody like,
yeah,
that,
that's it. And he should be, you know, I mean, he should get a month ban for that.
Yeah.
And, you know, not be able to play for a while. Not so, that he gets a game anyway. It was a cup
game. Yeah. So it's got to be a clear and obvious and ridiculous.
Yeah,
or the one where he should kick his cat, he'd get a game then.
Or the one I'm not getting involved in that. Or the one where he holds his face, as you just,
yeah,
mentioned.
Yeah, 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 yeah.
It's a retrospective ban, and we need to change the language, as you just said. We need to stop people like Michael Owen, love him dearly, great footballer,
yeah,
but saying he had the right to go down.
Yeah.
We need to stop all that talk. And we need to...
There's a little bit of contact there.
Yeah.
You know, and all that.
Yeah, he needs to go down. We need to say, no, that's cheating.
Yeah.
Cheating the fan. We need to change the language so it's cheating the fan because they're the ones who are...
It's
the cheating, the lying. It's a metaphor for life. We've got a lot of that going on in Parliament at the moment,
yeah,
and I think it's being
people
reflected.
Going down. That'd be fantastic. I enjoy that.
Jacob Rees-Mogg goes down, yeah, yeah, in the House of Commons.
Yeah. I mean, I think they have this, the most spurious, strangest offence of all in football, which is bringing the game into disrepute. And it strikes me that that is exactly what's happening,
yes,
when somebody does something like that.
I was only reminded the other day, we've come a long way since Robbie Fowler dived against David Seaman
and got up and apologised.
Sorry, David. Did he score the penalty in there? I think he did, didn't he?
I can't remember. Did he?
No, he didn't. I don't think he did.
He missed it.
On purpose? I can't really remember. But it was a beautiful day, wasn't it? Where he was going, sorry. And Arsene Wenger replayed a game because...
Sheffield United,
wasn't
we're it? We're so, yeah, far away from that,
well,
now, aren't,
well,
we?
The funny thing so about that away. Is that actually, and that was Arsenal offering to replay against Sheffield United. Arsenal have done that twice this season already, which is carry on when a player's down,
right,
and then score a goal, which tells you, you know, this is the, you know, the marble halls of Highbury and all
of
that bloody stuff.
Yeah. I mean, there used to be, didn't there, in the FA language, there used to be not only bringing the game into disrepute, but also ungentlemanly conduct.
Yes, yes.
Which is a very sort of, obviously, a very hangover from a Victorian era when people actually used to behave in a more gentlemanly
fashion.
Well,
thank you to refer only to yourself in that, sir.
Well, I'm far older than you two. But that should still be a thing that can be brought out for players surrounding the referee, for instance, for players surrounding the referee for wanting a penalty or wanting him to go to the VAR screen or wanting him to book somebody or blah, blah, blah. It's ungentlemanly conduct not to just take the referee's word for something.
Yeah,
yeah,
and there used to be that catch-all.
But didn't there also? I mean, yeah, this might maybe be me just having rose-tinted glasses. Well, I have got those, but didn't there used to be like players in your own team that would pick you up by the scruff of the neck and say, "Get on with it, lad," sort of
thing.
Well,
I remember real change at Stamford Bridge, Chelsea, where Didier Drogba came along, one of the greatest strikers we've ever had, but spent all the games on his arse. I mean, it was ludicrous how often he went down. And it ended up like watching American football. We'd just be gaining yardage as he'd go down and we'd take a free kick. And there was at one stage, there was a cutaway of one of the senior pros, I won't mention his name, Frank Lampard. And you could see him just like roll his eyes. He's like, I want to play football. What the hell are you doing? And it's like, but as fans, we were getting there. We were going, Just get the fuck up.
Absolutely. And I share your pain on that. And the other thing is, a player who you don't even see any challenge, particular challenge, will just lie on the floor and wait until the other team are shamed into putting the ball out for a throw-in. And you think, it's if that could happen in the marathon, it would be like somebody's about eighth and just go, it's like, stop, everybody stop, I've got a stitch.
I've got a shoelace. Lost,
you know, it can't be right,
I might have mentioned this on the last time I was on this podcast, but there was a time where Souness was sitting with Micah Richards and I can't remember who else was there. And I think Mo Salah had gone down and he was like a Liverpool fan, obviously Souness, and he was going, but that's kind of cheating. And the others were like looking at him like he was mental. The idea that going down now is cheating. We've moved that far away.
Well, we have.
Souness looks like a dinosaur.
The statistics are that there's the balls in play less now than ever before. It diminishes every season.
Yeah.
Because there's time wasting, because there's players going down, because it takes so long to start the game up again when Drogba's successor, whoever that is, sits on his arse and waits for the game to start again.
Yeah, it's boring to watch. Do you want to get? Can I move on to my next?
Yes, move on to your next one. I mean, I think
we accepted that.
I think we'd all back that. Difficult to implement, but you know, we like it.
What the game needs is an independent regulator to bring that sort of thing in.
We taking that one to FIFA or the FA? Which one? Anyway.
Yeah, no, to the Tracy Crouch report.
my next one is the thing which is. That have been done in pubs for years and years and years, but I think it might be worth experimenting with now because of VAR. When you start drawing lines all over the bloody television screen, you know there's something wrong, and I don't think VAR is going anywhere. So I'm not dying on this hill, by the way. But let's scrap the offside law. Let's just do it. And I did this actually on my podcast a while ago. I got to the letter O and I was running out of ideas. So I was doing the alphabet. And I went, get rid of the offside law. But then I started...
Very rich format you've given.
but then I was...
The dictionary works the same way, doesn't it?
Yeah. We were doing the A to Z of football. Got to it. I went offside. Let's get rid of the rule. And then I started looking into it. And did you know that in hockey, they used to have the offside law? And then one day, the clever people in hockey, field hockey, went, let's just get rid of it. So I interviewed Alex Danson about it, who's an England and British striker, she was. And she said they're all amazed watching football, that football is still going with this rule. Because I said, the thing is, don't you just get the long ball game? And she says, no, because... this is hockey, not football. You know, we've got to say possession. Pep Guardiola would love this. Possession is king. Yeah. And if you're attacking with 11 and you're defending with 10 because you're leaving one man up, you're going to concede goals. They found that out very early when they started to do those tactics. I did point out that the ball goes in the air a lot more in football. And she says still the advantage is always with the defender, really, because you've got to control it, wait for teams to come up. Not only does it create more space on the pitch if you do it.
Yeah.
Okay, you increase the amount of people who score goals because midfield always come up. The strikers go long eventually because you try and open the pitch out. She said it's exhausting. Footballers would get exhausted, but you wouldn't then just have all the emphasis on one striker scoring all the goals. You know the whole team would come in, so we could devalue some of those expensive strikers. But I don't know. I know Johan Cruyff. They tried it once in. I think in a Holland, in a Dutch league or something, and Johan Cruyff said it was the worst thing that he'd ever done, but they haven't tried it very often.
Did they not try it in America? Did they not try that for a little
bit? Yeah, and they've had the...
They've had that 30-yard line. Where you can be offside.
I mean, I've got a feeling that the offside rule, and I may have this completely wrong, came in because... What happened was, in fact, it was to do with defence rather than attack. So they would often have a player, basically, a goal hanger.
Yeah.
But I think, I'm right in saying this, Newcastle United started it having six defenders in the six-yard box to negate the one goal-hanging striker. And so what happened was the game just became incredibly sterile because, you know, the trouble is that I find is that as the years go on, the negative side of the game dominates more and more and more and more. The idea of stopping people playing, stopping people scoring, except if you don't concede a goal, you can't lose a game type of thing. So I think it's a great idea, but I think there'd have to be some caveats, and therefore there'd be an offside law.
Well, but we've now got these things like phases of play, what we just don't know no one knows what offside law is. The other day, right, there was a goal scored and the goalkeeper was up, and the whole of the British public had no idea that it was two people behind the ball, it's usually a goalie. And everyone's going, well, it's a goal. And it's like, no one even knows the bloody basic rule, which is two people in this country. Yeah. It was amazing if you went onto social media, people so confused.
Yeah.
So that basic law. So I don't know. I'm not going to die on this hill, but I'm willing to try it because I think
it would change how teams set up in defence, wouldn't it? You wouldn't be able to play that. There would be no point in playing that high defensive line or that bizarre high line that Liverpool play for when they've conceded a free kick. And they're very high up, and there's a lot of space in behind, because there'd be no incentive for the forwards not to just be in it.
Why can't we trial it down, like, where Oldham play, where people don't care, that sort of thing?
Well, next season. It's
the world's worst barrister. No, Your Honour. Like when your team, Oldham.
Why don't we trial it in the Club World Cup final? They trialled a thing, didn't they, in the semi-final? Did you see this? The different VAR thing that they trialled in the Chelsea game.
Yeah.
Which was a thing which has 29 points, data points on each player's body. Absurd thing, and it tracks them skeletally,
right?
And can answer the offside question without putting lines on the pitch. You can answer it very quickly.
You can just get rid of
the lot of technology. Yeah. It's just a lot of cameras everywhere and a lot of, but it's like you know, for motion capture. You know,
they've got
the spots they've got on the knee and on the thing, and they trialled it in the Al Hilal Chelsea, the big clash.
does it also mean derby? You can make the players appear like Gollum? Because once you've got the shape, it's fine.
No, exactly, yeah. I mean, every game will have 11 Andy Serkises in it.
Yeah.
Do you know the other thing I'm tempted, talking about that, is I'm really tempted, I don't know if they've ever trialed this before, putting more than one ref on the pitch. Like, we've got the linos. Okay? Yeah. So you just think of basketball, and I think it's Aussie rules have like 30 refs on the pitch or something. And but if you think about,
I think some of those are players.
Well, they seem to be touching with their hands. I don't know. Yeah. But you get like the basketball. You've got two refs on the pitch because it's a quick moving game, and they're big guys. You know, there's not a lot of room. They still manage to manoeuvre around. And I'm wondering whether we couldn't just get a couple, like, or give the lino some whistles, because empowering one man.
Yeah, and of course the power of the assistant referee, the liners, has just diminished to nothing.
Yes,
they can do nothing.
Nothing. Yeah,
they're not allowed to put their
when
flag.
When you see a line, when you see it,
they've got a flag and they can't wave the flag.
Don't wave that. You might stop a slow-moving train or something.
But they tried, didn't they? They tried putting some men behind the goal for a while,
they
didn't
did,
they?
Yes, they did. Yeah.
The fifth official.
And they were the same. They weren't allowed to do anything at all.
Officials and then one guy in the middle is the one with all the power.
They're like those dummy police cars you sometimes get at hotels.
Yeah.
You know, there is no policeman, but there's a police car there.
Yeah.
But they try, just talk about other things. I mean, the golden goal, silver goal, all of these things. They have tried things. They've just tried the wrong things, I think.
Yeah, I worry about giving all that power to one man in the middle. You know, we know what happens if you give one man power.
Well,
it's just going to be a Stalin thing.
Look at the dictators. And
like, but those people as well, refereeing attracts a very particular sort of personality.
People and then, who can't play football.
But or teach. but
or teach gym.
But those are the wrong people to be in charge of anything. Those people, they're very capricious and very sort of opinionated. And I said this a couple of weeks ago, that I think the problem with the VAR as it stands at the moment is that you've got a referee on the pitch, and the other person giving the decision is also a referee, is the bloke who refereed the last game that you saw, and they've switched places. And that those people should be a different genre of person. And the VAR should be the expert. You watch the match of the day, and the ex-player tells you, well, that's, you know, the ex-player knows that player's dived or knows what that player's intention is at that point. Why don't we listen to those people in the VAR thing? So that you've got the referee, got a referee's viewpoint, and not another referee who might have the same idiosyncratic and capricious upbringing that the first referee had.
The interesting thing about that is I am willing to accept generally that referees try to be neutral between the two teams.
Mm-hmm. Apart from Scott Oldham, who's got a real problem with...
But the idea that referees necessarily like each other is balmy. And so, in fact, if you are the VAR referee and you think the referee's a bit of a wanker and gets more games than you get...
And you get the chance to make him come all the way over to the thing to show him what a mug he is.
He's not very fit. Let's get him over to the touch.
Well, what I heard, and I don't know how true this is, but what I heard is there's a real hierarchy stuff going on in the ref. There's a real competition. Mm. And when the ref comes out, he is so much more powerful than the linos. Mm. And so the referee is always in control. And as you say, they've got no power anyway. Yeah. But he doesn't really like them to do much anyway. But I think if you empower more than one person, you've got then a team trying to.
I agree with you, Charlie. You see it all the time. Linesmen not giving the direction of a throw in until he gets the nod from the referee, and you think it's my job to know. But I've got to wait for you to tell. Yeah. And that does it. You see it all the time. You know that very late flag, and it's often. Tell me, that way.
And you see quite high profile referees being the fourth official whose job seems to be to hold up the substitute board and to have the managers in his face and complaining about this and complaining about the things that are happening on the field that he has no way of intervening in at all. Has no way of having an opinion on, no way of changing, contacting the referee to argue a point. Yeah. They're just there to take that sort of face spittle.
They're the whipping boys. They are quite literally taking the whipping from the referee.
Yeah, but a ball boy could do the substitute ball.
I don't know.
do you want another idea?
Yeah, of course.
We still got time.
Oh, yeah.
So my next idea is going to be unpopular.
And that's all we've got time for.
Obviously, we all come from, we all done some broadcasting in our time, and it's a big part of the game now. It's shifted, hasn't it? Now, it used to be the best place, the best seat was in the stadium. Now it's probably at home because you've got the VAR and all that sort of stuff. It's sort of moved slightly. And there's a couple of aspects to the filming of football games that I would change. And one of the aspects is I would go the Spanish way they film it to start with. It's only a small thing, but in the Premier League and the English football, what we do is we film it quite tight.
Yes, far too tight.
The Spanish, so you can actually see the game.
Yeah, yeah.
And I don't know why we've stuck with the way we've done it, but we have for years.
I agree with that totally.
And I'd like to see the phases of the game, which is fashionable to say, but I'd like to see that.
Yeah, yeah. I mean, there's a kind of false immediacy, isn't there, about seeing too much, too close. Mm.
Yeah.
I mean, particularly now in cricket, it drives me mad when they play a shot and the camera follows the ball and you can't see whether there's any
fielders around to
stop
it.
All you're watching is the ball rolling.
And then somebody comes in out of shot
and you think it's going to be a four and then someone just whizzes across and picks it up.
Well,
and I don't know why they show cricket that, but football the same, yeah. I mean, they show it far too close.
Far too tight.
Well, and I also think that actually, strange enough, that way of showing football and that way that a lot of people, you know, let's face it, a lot of people only watch football on television.
Yeah,
and so they see a decision on, say, offside as being a totally separate thing from the thing that's happened. Goal gets scored, then we'll see if it's offside. When you go to a game, I mean, the first thing you do, first of all, you have a vague sense of when it's going to be offside, which you can't get from television. And one of the first things you do, whether you know you're doing it or not, is you look to the linesman, don't you?
Yeah.
You know, and it's people jump up and you're going, it's offside. That's what you're looking for. Yeah. But people, they don't know how to watch football like that.
And one of the other things is you get players like, I remember for some reason, I hadn't seen Roy Keane play football, even though everyone was talking about how brilliant he was. And Chelsea were playing United. I was at Stamford Bridge and I was thinking, why is everyone talking about how brilliant Roy Keane is? When you actually watch Roy Keane, which is the same with Frank Lampard in the end, they were never more than 10 metres away from the ball. They were just so positional on the space. But you can't see that if you're watching TV.
That's exactly right. The first time when Stoke came up, the first time we played Tottenham, I suddenly realised why Harry Kane was such a brilliant player, because he's doing stuff all over the place that isn't involving the ball.
Yeah.
And you don't get that at all from television.
You do get to see sometimes, don't you? When I was watching Match of the Day last night, and you watch the game, but then when the pundits are talking about it, you do see they have that higher up view, that wider view that they can try and make a pundit point out of. I was watching Mike Richards talking about the Newcastle game, about how Everton were giving the ball away from the back too easily. And Newcastle, apparently, Mike Richards' point was that they were setting traps in triangles. Mm. And the graphic thing was drawing triangles between... And you can draw... any 3 points is a triangle.
Yeah, yeah.
Any 3 points. Yeah, yeah. Yeah, yeah. And, you know, it's like he'd spotted some great sort of visionary thing. One of the triangles was long and thin and went the whole width of the pitch. And then became an irregular quadrilateral as someone else ran across it.
Yeah, yeah.
And it was... But you do see a view in the pundit arena sometimes that you're not shown in the coverage. Yes. You know?
Yeah, and you sparking it all off, which is exactly what was meant to happen. But also, why do both the commentators watch the game live and not one of them doesn't watch on television? Because there's some things that are really obvious on the television screen that you see them arguing about, and you think, well, surely one of you should be watching. One of you can watch the close-up, one of you watch the wider. I just feel, because sometimes it's just so obvious they made such terrible, terrible errors one way or another. Go on, time for one more.
Quite, one more, and this is possibly the most controversial, because you two are...
Is it going to be about the North?
The North-South divide.
We hate the North.
Just kidding.
Half-time. Yeah. Half-time in TV terms, this is. Yeah. Let's talk about, I'm staying on broadcast here. Why can't it change a bit? Like, who remembers Martin O'Neill talking to Robbie Williams? Brilliant television, right? Do you remember that?
No.
Oh, God. The World Cup, when he starts telling him he's... anyway. So, bring some other people in. We all know what they're going to say. I always got told... Don't touch the crown jewels. But when I was working at one of the TV...
Well, not when you're on camera, Tim.
Well, it depends what sort of programme it is. Yeah.
It would become a different sort of... Yeah. It wouldn't be a cookery programme.
I remember Samuel L. Jackson being up... Who's he sporting now? Liverpool or Everton or someone? He was at one of those matches.
Yes.
And I said, get him up at half-time to have a chat. That's what they should do. Because we'd be really interested in that. Like, no, it's the crown jewels. Yet, we've all worked in TV, and you know for a fact, half-time, the ratings absolutely plummet down to blood. Zero and come back because no one's watching that
and
stuff
at half-time.
And all
the electric goes up because of the kettles.
Yes, but it's still that way that goes down. And I said, put a celebrity in there. Even if it's crap, at least you can tweet, I don't like him or whatever.
When Adrian came on, Adrian Charles came on a few weeks ago, he was saying that he hated doing the football on ITV because there was nothing at half-time. Just because there'd be adverts and then, what do you think? And then more adverts. There was no time to do anything. No time to even interest himself, you know, in anything.
Yeah. Put a celebrity in there.
Yeah. Like the FA Cup draw. Now, I have to ask you about your new website project, Tim.
Oh, okay.
Before we go any further, because
and
I've been given 10 quid. Yeah.
It's just a new platform called lovejoy.co.uk, because I've been doing my podcast now, I think, 280-odd episodes.
Yikes.
And
I've interviewed Chris here, and I've interviewed loads of different people, and lots of people have expertise on things like health and diet and fitness and whatever. And I've taken all that information, not all of it yet because we're still doing it, but taken snippets of it and stuck it online so people can read it. And it's free. There's no paywall. You can go on there and just look at all the information. I'm going to try and make some online content.
How many episodes did you say you've done?
280.
And all lots of advice about fitness.
Well, there are some. Yeah, not all of them, because I did some football podcasts in the middle of that. I think I got to letter. What letter?
Oh,
did I
you did
to?
The alphabet.
Yeah, I did the alphabet. Yeah.
Well, I mean, I don't want to. I'm not one to hype something, but it's strong. Me, if there's that much information in there, possibly if you bother visiting, tell us again.
lovejoy.co.uk.
You might find the answer to eternal life.
You do.
That's the place to find it.
Or
if
at least
anywhere.
To that other thing that's been bugging you.
Yes, whatever that
is. What is that? I remember. Oh, it's gone out right in my head now.
I'm just speaking generally to the world at large. I don't know what's bugging them.
Tim, I get the feeling you've got many, 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 many more suggestions to improve, not just the world of football,
God,
so but the
many.
World, yes, quite frankly.
I didn't even get to the beach ball bit.
Oh, no. Well, there's a teaser for 26 weeks' time, ladies and gentlemen. And Tim Lovejoy returned. Thank you all for listening. Don't forget to download it. And we may or may not be back next week.
Social Podcast Network.
Hello, it is Ryan, and I was on a flight the other day playing one of my favorite social spin slot games on ChumbaCasino.com. I looked over at the person sitting next to me, and you know what they were doing? They were also playing Chumba Casino. Coincidence? I think not. Everybody's loving having fun with it. Chumba Casino is home to hundreds of casino-style games that you can play for free anytime, anywhere, even at 30,000 feet. So sign up now at ChumbaCasino.com to claim your free welcome bonus. That's ChumbaCasino.com and live the Chumba life.
No purchase necessary. VGW. Void where prohibited by law. See terms and conditions. 18+.